number one risk is actually not microgravity. The number one risk to health for humans in space is radiation. Some of the radiation beyond our atmosphere, we can protect people from, but some of it we can't.
This is Tectonics, the podcast focused on the people and passion at the intersection of technology and health.
A self-described geek, Dorit Donavion, was happily pursuing a career in molecular biology until a chance encounter diverted her course to space medicine. Today, we're excited to discuss her journey to this final frontier and learn what it takes to have the right stuff.
This is Tectonics. I'm Lisa Soonan.
And I'm David Shaywitz. And today's episode is brought to you by DNA Nexus, the secure and compliant cloud platform that enables enterprise users to analyze, collaborate around, and integrate massive amounts of genetic and other health data.
At secret locations throughout America, 56 of our greatest pilots are at this very moment vying to be chosen as one of the first men to go into space. These are the most up-to-date tests imaginable. This is the most rigorous physical testing ever done to human beings. They're being subjected to every kind of stress our doctors and engineers can invent.
I love this stuff. This is from The Right Stuff, from actually imitating an ancient real, you know, sort of movie reel or television reel about the heroic nature of early astronaut research.
And here we are recording from our secret location in Mill Valley, California, about to talk to somebody working between the worlds of NASA and the terrestrial health system.
I know. I love all this. I'm such a space nut, Lisa. I grew up fascinated by astronomy and building Estes model rockets. My favorite museum in the world is the Smithsonian Air and Space Museum, and my favorite movie is The Right Stuff.
Yeah, space is pretty cool. I mean, it's hard to not get excited when you talk about these things and the promise of, you know, those frontiers that we don't all get to see. And I think all of us find some excitement in thinking about what goes on, you know, beyond our own atmosphere here. It's very exciting to think about the science and the healthcare science that goes on that most people really don't hear about.
Exactly. And I think that's why we're particularly excited to be joined today by somebody who understands this topic better than most. Welcome to the show, Dorit.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
So before we get into some of your really fascinating journey, I was struck by a recent conversation we had when I was talking about how much I like The Right Stuff. And then you responded, that's so old school. And you were talking about how there's a different understanding of what it takes in a way to have the right stuff. Can you elaborate on that?
Yeah, sure. So when you think about the old space program, it was really quite a different set of individuals that were called upon to take our nation to the moon. It was really Navy fighter pilots, Air Force fighter pilots who had the skill set and, if you will, the cojones to really put their lives at stake and to be in a program that really was quite dangerous at the time. And the astronauts of today are quite different. Believe it or not, our space program has really evolved. It's a heck of a lot safer than it used to be. And, you know, that's through many years of trial and error, and there have been a lot of lives lost, as you know, and it's a great tragedy. But today what we're looking for is less of those sort of alpha male pilots and more of scientists, engineers, geologists, earth scientists, and folks that can work together in a cohesive manner in a team and be able to sort of put up with sometimes boredom and lack of stimulation, because you're going to be in space for a long period of time. If you're going on the mission to Mars, you're going to be locked up in a small chamber with a lot of other folks, but you're going to have to keep yourself busy. And those exciting sort of by the seat of your pants flying is going to be a little less of that.
Well, I was excited for a minute because I thought I had a chance.
Well, my dad used to always say the geek shall inherit the earth, so apparently they're also inherit space.
Absolutely, it's true.
So you're running now or participating in running the NASA-funded Baylor Institute for Space Biomedical Research, right?
Correct.
And so tell us what that is exactly.
Yeah, so NASA is an engineering organization, as you know, and it's very good at building rockets and all kinds of engineering solutions. And it really needed the help of the academic community and the medical community to try and solve some problems that are very unique to keeping a human healthy in space. And so NASA reached out and put out a competitive call, and asked upon an entity to be created to help them do this. And so that's what my organization does. Is it helps them consider, solve, and mitigate all the problems that would come along with having a human live and work productively in the space environment for long periods of time.
Well, I can't imagine that most people think about that as an issue. What is the problem? I mean, you go to space, you do your thing, you know. What is the health?
What's the big deal?
What's the big deal with going into space?
There are a lot of big deals.
But what do you worry about the most is what Lisa's trying to ask.
So the number one risk is actually not microgravity. The number one risk to health for humans in space is radiation.
Huh.
We're very fortunate to have our wonderful atmosphere that protects us from all the damaging radiation that comes from the cosmos. So there's all kinds of cosmic events that release a lot of radiation, and our atmosphere is protecting us. There's also a lot of radiation that comes from our sun, and again, our atmosphere protects us against that. The higher up you go, and especially if you leave our atmosphere, if you're thinking about going to Mars or a planetary body like anything like an asteroid or even the moon, you are leaving the protection of our atmosphere, and now you're actually a lot more exposed to the damaging effects of radiation, which are not good for you.
Does this impact the people on the ISS?
The International Space Station, you mean, yeah?
Yeah, they're still within the protection of our atmosphere, but they're higher up. So the higher up you go, essentially the thinner the atmosphere gets, if you will, and you are exposed to more radiation than you are here on Earth, but they're still within the protection of our atmosphere.
Huh, I hadn't appreciated that. Is there a low Earth orbit?
It's exactly right. It's called a low Earth orbit.
Lisa's looking at me very impressed.
Mr. Smarty Pants.
There you go. No, I think I read Elon Musk's tweets, actually. But
that's right. So some of the radiation that is out there beyond our low Earth orbit, beyond our atmosphere, we can protect people from, but some of it we can't. There just isn't currently a way to do that. And so we can't exactly replicate space radiation. It's something that's very difficult to do here on Earth, and you can't do it ethically with humans. And so it's all extrapolated from atom bomb survivors, et cetera, and it's very difficult. So it's very theoretical. But we do know that based on the radiation that was measured on the Mars rover, the trip there and the trip back and on the surface, it's a lot more radiation than we ever envisioned. And I haven't even gotten to the part about microgravity and the lack of gravity and the effects on all your tissues and that, how that's not good for any of your tissues as well.
Yeah, I think that there's a great deal of cardiovascular risk that's been, is it just hypothesized or actually experienced by people who've gone to space as well?
Well, I was
right?
thinking about with the low gravity with things like osteopenia, right? And the weakening of the bones and the weakening of muscles, right?
Exactly. We could probably mitigate the weaknesses in the bones, the muscles, and the heart by ensuring that the astronauts have access to exercises. And that's one thing we also talked about in our previous conversation. You're not going to have a full-on gym when you're on the way to Mars, because the International Space Station is actually a fairly large structure. It's about the size of a football field. And that thing circling the Earth, it's got a lot of space up there, but on the way to Mars, you're not going to have all those extra rooms. You're essentially going to be stuck like in a Winnebago, essentially, for 6 months at a time. And so we really have to be thinking about providing exercise capabilities that are not only for aerobic exercise, like a rowing machine, for example, and how one would do that in a zero gravity environment, imagine that, but also provide the kind of exercises that would provide tension on the bones and the muscles. So that's, you know, essentially doing like deadlifts, et cetera.
Yeah, if you were in Northern California, you'd need to be able to provide Pilates classes on
it. Exactly. Exactly, or yoga, right? Keep
so,
the stretches.
So here's a related question. So when you hear about this, oh, we have to do research to protect the astronauts from cosmic radiation, I can imagine, you know, people look at this as a representative question and say, all right, well, look, this space medicine stuff seems like an area of study that's, you know, kind of, you know, for lack of a better phrase, out there. You can really seem kind of esoteric, but I know that you bring a very different perspective to this, and you think that actually space medicine is sort of a very relevant area of study. Could you elaborate?
Absolutely. So there's actually two things that I want to bring up with regards to how space medicine really improves the life and healthcare here on Earth. One is that when you put the body in the space environment and you're asking these very difficult questions about how to make a person more resilient in the presence of a lot of injury, like from radiation, you're actually solving for a healthier human here on Earth. There are plenty of people who get exposed to radiation through medical treatments, for example. Most folks who have a cancer or tumor undergo a combination of radiation therapy as well as chemotherapy. And there isn't a whole lot of emphasis on the damage that the radiation can do and even the chemo to the normal healthy tissues that are often affected by these treatments. And so sometimes, you know, that you could kill or cure the tumor, but you end up...
like a secondary malignancy, yeah.
Yeah, secondary tumors later as a result of the radiation, or you end up having some very debilitating quality of life and even life-ending events like heart failure or damage to the lung tissue. We know that this is actually a real effect in patients receiving radiation treatments. So by solving for protecting healthy tissues in a population like the astronauts, we're really driving forward some new therapies and new approaches on how to protect all the healthy tissues for people here on Earth.
I was going to ask you about ophthalmology because I know that's another place where you've found that crossover between the space medicine side and the Earth medicine side.
Exactly. And I guess there's three points. I just made one. The second one is that by putting the body in a zero gravity environment, we're actually learning a lot about the way the body itself here on Earth regulates fluids, for example. So in the zero gravity environment, things shift around. Your organs aren't even in the same place that they are here on Earth because the gravity is not...
Not to mention some of the other parts as you age just succumb to gravity.
Yeah, actually, I'm thinking that, you know, for women, there may be some advantages in zero gravity, especially for us middle-aged women.
If you guys could come up at NASA with a zero gravity bra, everybody would be grateful.
Exactly. Well, in addition to moving your body parts, there's also fluids that get shifted around the eye and around the brain, which we've actually seen causes some damages to the optic nerve. And that has led to some very interesting discoveries here on Earth on how our body regulates how much fluid is allowed up in your head and around your eyes. And that's actually led to some interesting discoveries and new innovations for glaucoma patients. And, you know, Lisa, you've been very involved in this, getting this started by introducing me to some of the best in ophthalmology. So I really appreciate what you've done for the program. And then third thing I want to bring up is the fact that you have to do medicine in a whole new different way. In space, you're not going to have any doctor that you wish experts to call upon if you have a problem. And even though our astronauts are very healthy people, they will get sick. All people do. And we have to figure out a way to give medicine in a different way than we do here on Earth. And all the solutions that we're developing, actually, we've discovered really pushes medicine into a model where things are a lot more portable, cheaper, lightweight, easy to use, require non-experts, essentially don't require, you know, a neurocare doc or an ophthalmologist to administer, but even engineers can administer it, thinking about, you know, the future astronaut is not going to be necessarily a highly specialized doctor. So that's all driven innovations in medicine that I believe will actually decrease the cost here on Earth as well.
That's so exciting. Could you give the discuss the example involving kidney stones?
Oh, yeah. This is one of my favorites. So people here on Earth, there's actually a fairly large percentage. I want to say it's at least it's close to 10%, something like that. They do experience kidney stone, and it's very debilitating. There's very severe pain. And generally the standard of care is you go to the ER and they'll do a CT scan or an X-ray and they'll see a stone and they'll send you home with some pain medications and tell you to drink a lot of water and hopefully the stone will pass. And usually it doesn't. About 30% pass normally. And then when you're unlucky, you have to go back to a urologist. And they either have to zap you with some very serious lithotripsies, the procedure, some very serious, essentially a type of sound wave, but it's almost like a tsunami that comes at your kidney in order to break up the stone. And it has to be done under anesthesia.
And that's not going to work out as well in space where astronauts,
yeah,
from what you said,
that's not,
are more likely
exactly
to get stones.
Yeah, astronauts, because they are breaking down bone more rapidly in the zero gravity environment, they do release a lot more minerals like calcium, and those get sequesters in the kidneys. So they do have a higher risk of kidney stones. We've had about 15 cases of stones in astronauts, and you know, it's a small population. So, and once you've gotten a stone one time, you're much more likely to, because there's always some residual mineralization that's left behind after you break up a stone, and that seeds a new one. The other thing that urologists will do is sometimes they'll go in through a scoping into your urethra and essentially use a sort of a little basket to try and collect the stones. Again, it's an anesthesia procedure, and it's highly specialized.
I would hope so.
Ain't going to work well in space.
So what are you doing about
Unless
that?
Unless you're Matt Damon, maybe, I guess.
Yeah, really?
Right. It would have been interesting to see how he would treat his own kidney stone, but I have a way for him to do that. So imagine this, okay? This is a space need, essentially driving technology for Earth. We actually funded a group up in Seattle, University of Washington, and they use ultrasound to not only detect the stone, but also push on it using ultrasound waves that are very low intensity. There's no pain, and they could scoot the stone out of the kidney into the ureter and out into your urethra. So they help the stone get cleared naturally. Now, if the stone is too big, they can actually help to dissolve it, but not using the tsunami-like power of what lithotripsy is, but essentially it's a dissolution from the inside like sand. And it's a much gentler procedure, and it can be done in children. And that's the other thing, and you don't need anesthesia. So you really could envision the next movie when Matt Damon comes back and he gets a kidney stone, he can treat himself.
Well, that is so interesting, because if you think about the dynamics around telemedicine and moving diagnostics and digital therapeutics to the home and all the work that's going on now to reduce costs on the hospital side here on Earth, it seems to me like you have an opportunity to really advance that out of necessity, clinical necessity, not just economic necessity, but that can really feed the economic necessity adoption curve down here at the hospital.
Exactly.
Systems.
Because we have a very, forgive the pun, a very high bar for medicine, we are driving innovations. As you know, Lisa, especially with glaucoma, you know, this fellow that has been thinking about, he was a neuro-ophthalmologist, he's been thinking about this interesting solution on how to treat glaucoma for years, and he never got around to starting a company and actually developing the prototype. But we came forward and we said, we believe in this, we need this solution. And he actually put it together. He came in with a 5 times the match with investors, because once we stepped in and said, look, the space program is interested, all these investors said, okay, well, maybe there is some use here. And they got behind it.
I think it's a really interesting question because, you know, we recently did a show where we spoke with someone who was focused on pediatric innovation. And they were talking about the challenges of motivating innovation in a what's perceived often as a relatively small market, and to try to get more people to sort of focus on that. And I would think that, you know, you're right, your need to motivate innovation for space applications is intrinsically even more narrow, yet your job is to motivate entrepreneurs. And I know that you view yourself, I think you use the term, as a space angel. Could you describe what's your thinking about, how do you get people to more people to innovate in an area that at first blush you say, well, yeah, maybe eventually one can use something for something, but you know, you're imagining trying to present to a VC and be like, what's your market? Four people, you know, four people going to Mars in 50 years, you know, okay, next.
Yeah, that's a great, exactly the right question to ask. And I have a great answer for that. So you're absolutely right. Our market is tiny. But what we do is we actually, we work with the companies to ensure that their market needs are absolutely addressed. I would never ask a small company to stretch itself so thinly for a government program that's only going to have four customers. Absolutely not. But a very minor tweak in the beginning of a product development, for example, miniaturization, or making a product extremely robust, or using radiation-hardy microprocessors. It's a very small decision to be made as you're making your prototype, but that can actually make the difference for me to be able to use it. Now, the advantages to working with the space program is you have access to tremendous resources. Engineers at NASA, all of our excellent doctors, and access to patient populations all over the world, essentially, that our doctors who are funded by our programs are giving you access to these things, because everybody's really kind of pulling together to make a product that's unique that can really help mankind go beyond our Earth. But it's absolutely never at the cost of making sure that those companies get the products to the Earth market. We call it the Earth market, because NASA doesn't want just a one-off prototype for the space program. They want a fully refined, FDA-approved, clinically demonstrated product that is accepted by the medical community. And so those products have to go through the same processes. We just have to tweak them just a little bit to make them right for space.
It's so interesting, because I often have said to startups that gravity is their biggest challenge. You know, there's always a pressure to push them down and out to failure. And, you know, I think it's interesting to think that you could be a source not just of capital, but probably also of public relations and interesting stress testing to help them leap over that chasm from, you know, idea to reality.
So I have exactly, Lisa, I have a program that specifically targets very small companies. A lot of these guys come in with like maybe one or two people and they don't even have a prototype. They'll come in and nobody pays attention to them. But I put them through a fairly rigorous vetting process. As you know, I have a board of very savvy folks, VCs and FDA regulation experts and lawyers and business development folks and doctors. And they really receive a lot of press from us. And I can't tell you how many CEOs have told me nobody would have paid attention to them if we haven't come forward and helped them out. And it's not just a one-time shot. I basically make sure that they get follow-on funding. I work with VCs. I bring them to the attention of other opportunities and really make sure that they do well.
So exciting. Is there a particular company that you can talk about your experience with?
Yeah, I love this company. It's a medical food. It's called Enteraid, and it's one. When they came to us, their management team was in disarray. It's a product that's made out of amino acids. It only has like 8 calories, but they've been specially selected to improve gut health, to improve your gut in the face of radiation, in the face of inflammation from all kinds of issues like inflammatory bowel disease. They've actually demonstrated that it protects the gut from the damage of all these different insults. And the reason I like it is it's something that you could take daily and will just make you more resilient. And one thing we're concerned about is damage to your gut from radiation. For patients, for example, who are undergoing chemo or radiation treatments,
right,
they'll undergo, several weeks worth of nausea. They can't keep their weight up. This product is really helpful.
Are you sure it's not something you just saw at Whole Foods? I mean,
No.
This is really credible. It sounds like, oh, everything you need for gut health. It sounds like the kind of...
It is really an amazing product. And you know, my mother-in-law has a gluten allergy, and my son's wife's mother, and she's been complaining for years. I said, try this. She's on it every day, and she's complaining because she's gained weight. I'm like, duh, you're able to eat now.
Does she just go pick it up at the astronaut store or what? I mean, where do you get?
No, it's currently online. We just funded them to do a clinical trial in cancer patients, but you can order it online without a prescription. But it's too good to be true almost. The military is looking at them for dehydration in their astronauts, and they're also looking at them for third world diarrhea in children, and there's lots of applications.
What's the company called?
Enterade. Well, actually, they changed the product's called Enterade. The company name is Intrinsic Health Solutions. They actually think they can help with cystic fibrosis as well, but that's another story. But anyway, we found them. They were not a serious company when we found them. But my VC is actually my most skeptical VC, works for Sante Ventures. He said, these guys have something. This is an amazing product. And I was so surprised. And since then, and this was in 2011, they've brought in a tremendous management team, and they're just going gangbusters. And I'm so pleased. And now we're able to get them into human studies. They're doing a study with Dana-Farber. And the CEO, he told me, if it wasn't for you guys, you know, 5 years ago believing in us, I would never have found this company and joined their team. And I'm just so pleased to have been able to help them.
Wow, that is so cool. Are you using this product now, like on the International Space Station or anywhere else?
So the problem with getting it to space station is volume. So what we want them, you know, to send anything that's a drink up into space, they recycle water up there. They recycle their yesterday's coffee and drink it, okay?
Horror. Oh, my God.
Yeah. So we're working towards making it a powder, which will be a lot more reasonable to get into space. But I have a case in my office, and you know what else it's good for is hangovers.
Which is a huge problem in space, I have to imagine.
Sure, especially for the Russians.
Really, what are you going to do all day except drink if you're sitting in the Mars station, huh? That's fascinating. So what is the greatest next big opportunity you see? How can you work with, you know, the entrepreneurs to solve a particular problem? And what is that one? What is the Holy Grail?
The Holy Grail really is radiation countermeasures. I told you about one. And I told you I have this vision for helping patients on Earth, because I've heard so many sad stories about people who really have very poor quality of life and get secondary cancers, and there just isn't a market for it on Earth because patients don't know to ask for it. Doctors are so concerned with killing the tumor that oftentimes they it's secondary to think about the damage to the healthy tissues. I know that all doctors worry about the health of their patients, but pharmaceutical companies have not really seen a market here. And so it's really about creating a market and making it a little sexy, because if you think about it, you're also helping the space program. You know, we could put a little spin on this. So I'm hoping that that's the next big thing.
Yeah, in case curing cancer is not enough for people.
Exactly.
But Dory, we really...
It's cool, but it's not astronaut cool.
not astronaut cool. Well, we're at the very sort of end of our time here. I know we've only touched on a fraction of the issues or the topics that we could have. So I guess we'll have to have you back. I love this stuff, and it's so great that the program, space program, has folks like you leading the charge and being sort of the and able to integrate science and medicine and space and entrepreneurship. It just sounds like an amazing place to be, and how fortunate to have someone like you leading the charge.
And it's so great to see you recognized for that work with the recent grant you got, $250 million from NASA to continue those efforts for the next 6 to 12 years. It's very exciting to see.
It's incredible. That's wonderful. Thank you so much for joining us.
Sure. Can I just have one plug, please?
Yes.
I want to, to your listeners, I want to put the plug out there. If you have an interesting solution, a medical solution, You may not even see the connection to what we need in space. Get in touch with me. Let me know what you have, because sometimes I can see a connection and a way to work together that you may not even realize. So I put that out there, and Lisa, maybe you guys can put the website up and my email address. I'm happy for people to get in touch with me.
Absolutely. You want to say your website right now, just for the listeners?
Sure. The website, where our institute's closing down, we have a new one, so I don't have the new website, but I'm going to give my email address, which is Donoville, Donoviel, at B as in boy, C as in Charlie, M as in Mary, .edu, BCM. It's Baylor College of Medicine, .edu. Thank you.
Wow, now that is being really interested in feedback to give out your email like that.
Yeah.
I would say she's serious.
Good luck with the deal flow. Take care, Dorit.
Thank you very much.
Have a great day.
Bye.
Dorit Donoviel is the director of the Biomedical Innovations Lab at the Center for Space Medicine at Baylor.
Wow, she is terrific. It's so interesting to think about how much of technology has really been advanced by the federal government. If you think about it, if it were for the federal government, a lot
of stuff
would never happen.
And even specifically from space, about space. I mean, right from my understanding, it's like from Velcro to Tang.
Yeah, exactly. Tang. Maybe they have the secret powder recipe for her Enteraid solution. It is really interesting to get the breadth of activity that we get to see on the show. Next time, you will hear from Abner Mason, who is CEO of Consejo Sano, a telemedicine company
Looking
focusing
to
on
that.
The Hispanic community in America and beyond.
If you like our show, please rate us on iTunes. You can follow Lisa Soonan at VentureValkyrie.com, as well as on the Timmerman Report.
And you can follow David Shaywitz writing at Forbes. We're grateful to our sponsor, DNA Nexus, the secure and compliant cloud platform that enables enterprise users to analyze, collaborate around, and integrate massive amounts of genetic and other health data.
Tectonix is produced by Connected Social Media and recorded in Tectonix Studio B in the very terrestrial Mill Valley, California. Take care.
To infinity and beyond. Mm-hmm.